Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for UFC 259 with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru with UFC 259, Blachowicz versus Adesanya. Wow, this card is stacked. And I know people say that a lot about fights, about fighting in general. But I mean, this card has fight card of the year written all over it.
Oh man, I mean, I'm sitting here in my, you know, little UFC zip up, all prepped and ready to go. You know, I've got the Adesanya on, and I mean, I can't wait to get into it here, because even though I'm a big time fan, you can't underestimate what Jan Blachowicz brings to the table here, and he is the light heavyweight champion.
Not to mention, we have two other title fights on this card: Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson for her featherweight belt, a belt she hasn't defended yet. Certainly going to be an interesting fight. I know a lot of people are writing off Megan quite early, but I look forward to dissecting it. And not to mention, last but certainly not least, Petr Yan versus Aljamain Sterling, the people's main event. This is the best fight of the evening. This is going to be my selection for fight of the night.
Talk about an even matchup, and both of these guys just following, you know, their social media and seeing where they're at as far as training goes. Oh man, they're ready to go.
I really can't wait, and we're ready to go as well. So let's kick off this first fight.
Right, let's dive right in. Mario Bautista versus Trevin Jones. We got a late replacement here. Mario Bautista coming in on short notice, but he's going to also have the 2-inch height advantage, 2-inch reach advantage, and 3 years younger than Trevin Jones. Bautista, 2-1 in his UFC career, where Jones says he has a no contest, but we remember what he did to Timur Valiyev, making him grapple with the referee after he knocked him out. So, unfortunately, overturned due to the
chronic combat conversations.
I still think that counts in my mind, but we see someone with a lot of experience.
Not a no contest in my mind. That's a win. The only reason I would discredit his actual win is because he could have been stopped in that first round.
Yeah.
By Valiyev, a lesser ref. I mean, maybe a better ref.
Stop. Donyode. But the question for me is, I see Bautista does a lot of work to the head. He had that crazy flying knee knockout of Miles Johns in the second round back in February last year. And he did go to a crazy war with Sun, going to a unanimous decision back in 2019 in July. So it seems like he spreads out his fights. Doesn't fight too often, but he did take a short notice here. So that probably means he's coming in ready. And Trevin Jones, you know, he only has 2 knockouts on his career, does have 4 submissions, and comes in with a jiu-jitsu black belt. And Bautista's a brown belt, so he might be a little bit behind on the ground, especially seeing that Trevin Jones has been trading with Drysdale Jiu-Jitsu and Extreme Couture recently.
Absolutely. I'm personally on Mario Bautista here. I think he's the more explosive fighter, even though he's coming in off short notice. I really like what he did to Miles Johns, who's a really good fighter. He beat Jinsu Sun. You can't knock his loss to Corey Sandhagen. Yeah, I'm going with Mario Bautista. I like him by decision, plus 125. If you like my theory on why they sometimes schedule fighters to be first, I mean, this fight could end by finish. You know how sometimes they get that look in their eye and the cage locks in and it's the first fight of the night and it's in this small cage with no crowd and somebody just drops quick. And it's definitely possible that Bautista could get a finish. I like even plus 210 for that if you like that theory. But I think the safe play is decision.
I think that the knockout would be the most interesting prop if you were going to split it up for Bautista, because I do agree he is the most likely one to win the rounds and win the fight. Trevin Jones has been hurt to the body, and we've seen the knees from Bautista. So maybe there could be something there, even if he doesn't land a big shot, you know, up top. We could see something at plus 410 for knockout. You know, I'll keep it small because it's a short notice, and I admittedly haven't done too much tape on Bautista and Jones overall, but that's a tasty little prop to have fun with, a plus 410 knockout to open the card.
I was just going to say that it's actually kind of interesting. He has 3 wins by KO and 3 wins by submission, Mario Bautista. So I'm actually not, I wouldn't be certain about the KO. I'm not sure that he's like itching for that. He might just as well go for a submission. So I actually like him by finish plus 210 if you're going to bet finish. But that would be my, again,
I could see the submission not actually being a path to victory for him. The only reason I say that, Trevin Jones actually wrestled Timur Valiyev at the end of the first round, got a takedown when he needed to save time and survive, and he's the black belt. So I think that he could possibly survive the exchanges on the ground, you know, barring getting rocked and jumped on top of that. So that's where
Bautista certainly has that power. The only thing, I again, not to just pay too much Wikipedia capper here, but I mean, his one finish loss is by submission, Trevin Jones. So he has lost by submission before. His other losses are by decision. So yes, of course, anytime they step in the octagon with 4 ounce gloves, they can get knocked out. And we've seen Bautista with the knockout power. It's certainly in his last fight with the that flying knee to ground and pound.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like we agree on the pick. We might differ on our props, but let's see where we end up after weigh-ins. Our next fight, Yoros Medic versus Elan Cruz. And Cruz comes in with a 7-inch reach advantage, although Medic is going to be 1 inch taller. Cruz also 4 years older at 31 and lost his UFC debut to Spike Carlisle by just a crazy aggressive finish that I don't know Cruz was really ready for someone of that stature, you know, someone that had that much experience, you know, at 8-2 coming into the UFC. So when I turn that on its head, Yoros Medic at 6-0, making his debut, 4 knockouts, 2 submissions. I see a guy that hasn't really been the distance, and Cruz has 4 decision wins in his career. He has been finished, 1 knockout, 2 submissions, but I think if you're looking for an underdog play, yeah, maybe Cruz could be someone you're looking at here.
I do think that Medic has the, or Medic, I don't know how to pronounce his name, has the possibility of shitting in the apple pie this week. He just has that look to him. The guy that lost to Spike Carlisle, who's not even in the UFC anymore, he looked decent, I guess, against Steve Nguyen with a finish in round 3, good enough to get the contract. But we've seen Dana White Contender Series guys, I don't, not necessarily get it done.
And that's so, and that's what Medic is. So it's, which Dana White Contender Series guy do you trust?
Neither, so stay away.
And Medic coming out of Kings MMA now, you know, maybe he gives him a little bit of trouble, and I could see him getting a violent finish one way or another. I just don't trust it at this line, making his UFC debut.
You have to figure he's getting good looks over there at Kings MMA with Vittori and Gastelum, right?
I would think so. I see Cruz going up weight. He did lose, cutting down to 145, and I think he's going to be a little bit better at 155 here. I don't know if he's going to be as susceptible to the finish. And, you know, let's see how it plays out. But I'm going to take the underdog shot. You got Cruz was at plus 144. So I thought it was attractive enough to make a play, because he could win by a decision if he could grind it out and get this guy to gas.
I certainly want to see how they look at weigh-ins, because it looks like this is his first ever fight at lightweight. So he could be, well, not thick enough. So I really want to see that.
That's a good question, especially with his long reach. Let's get down to our first women's fight of the evening, Lavinia Souza against Amanda Lemos. Souza almost double the experience of Lemos at 14-2, Lemos at 8-1-1. Souza's actually going to be the taller fighter, which isn't normal for her, coming in at 5'5 to the 5'4 of Lemos, but Lemos will have a 2-inch reach advantage. They have a similar leg reach. I know Souza loves to dig those kicks in, and she has a very diverse game. So if you take a quick look at the lines here before we, you know, really get into our breakdown, you see Lemos at minus 230 and Souza at plus 190. And, you know, apparently on 5 Dimes, the line opened with Souza as a huge favorite and the line completely flipped, but I'm not sure I ever saw that on DraftKings or FanDuel. So I think we've seen Lemos the favorite the whole time and keep growing.
Agreed. I didn't get to see that line anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I wouldn't have been interested and Sosa as a play as a big favorite, but you're telling me Sosa plus 190. I mean, whenever I see her getting introduced by Bruce Buffer, she's doing the little mini Nate Diaz, you know, hands by her side, just pacing back and forth, staring, you know, getting all juiced up. You know, she's tough. She's got these crazy body kicks, beautiful switch kick to the liver, heavy leg kick. She's got a big overhand right. I think against Brianna Van Buren, she showed that she could be wrestled a little bit and controlled by someone who is stronger. But Van Buren was also much shorter, actually 5 inches shorter, the smallest fighter in the UFC. And she was able to get a nice leverage point and really control stuff. And also, she had a lot of power and was able to touch up Sosa a little bit. But she was able to control herself when it got into the grappling realm. For me, Lemos, I don't see as much, you know, distinct stuff on her resume to see that she could really handle herself. You know, Mizuki wasn't a big enough test in my mind.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I don't think I'll be taking Sousa. I don't really think she's high enough output, to be quite honest. And that's something that really scares me off. She doesn't really look comfortable in her striking. And at the end of the day, that's where the fight starts. And I think she's going to struggle to take it to the ground against an aggressive Lemos. So, I mean, you look at her last fight versus Yoder. While she did win, Yoder threw 176 strikes. She landed 90 strikes. I mean, if you're letting Yoder land 90 strikes on you, that's not good for your overall pace and control of a fight, you know, and she's going to need to take it to the ground with Lemos. And I don't think that she'll be able to. I think the line switched for good reason. For some reason, Vegas continues to discredit Lemos at the window. And the betting market continues to flip that line. It happened with her last fight, and it happens here. I really think I'm going to pass unless I see something crazy at weigh-ins. But Lemos by decision, minus 110, I don't know. Looks fine. Sosa to me is just low pressure. And like I said, does not look comfortable enough striking.
Well, I think that Lemos doesn't really open up a lot of her striking until someone gets her backed up to the fence a lot of the time. So I think that it might be a little bit more muted for her because a lot of her striking stats come from 4 or 5 counter hooks all put together in a row within, you know, a 3 or 4 second range. She's adding up quickly in the striking department, making counters on fighters that I just don't think or as decorated as Sosa is. You know, the losses that she has in her career to Brianna Van Buren and Angela Hill by split decision in Invicta.
Yeah, I mean, you do have a good point because Sosa was a former Invicta champ. You know, she is well decorated. Only, you know, 14-2 is a good record. So it is interesting to see her at such a dog price. I do see why it's tempting. There is something that worries me about her lack of striking, how uncomfortable she's looked since coming into the UFC. Maybe she could really have a coming out party here. Again, a win over Sarah Froda. I mean, is that when Sarah Froda came in 7 pounds overweight or something like that? Yeah. Alex Chambers, where she was a minus 1,300 favorite or something. So this is going to be a good fight, but might be one you want to stay away from.
Yeah, I can't help myself, though. So, you know, I'm playing the underdog at plus 190 and maybe even submission by plus 1,000. It's a little interesting to me.
That's amazing. I love it.
Let's get right along. We got a big card here. Sean Brady versus Jake Matthews. Brady coming in just a little bit smaller. Matthews has a 1-inch height advantage, 1-inch reach advantage, and a 3-inch leg reach advantage. Also, Matthews, although he's 10-4 in the UFC, he's going to be 2 years younger than Brady, who's 3-0 in the UFC. It's a big time difference in who you've been fighting. And I also see one of the bigger concerns for me is, you know, Matthews and his style, I don't know if it matches up so well against a guy like Brady. I think everyone's kind of thinking, oh man, well, we had that Bilal Muhammad spot. We were going to fade Brady hard. And I came into this fight thinking I was going to be picking Matthews because I was looking for a spot to fade Brady. I'm not sure it's this fight.
Yeah, I just don't see where Matthews is better. I mean, I think Brady is better everywhere. I think he's a better striker. I think he's a better wrestler. I think he's a better grappler. I think he has better cardio. I think he has stronger leg kicks. I mean, I just think that he is better everywhere. And when you want to talk about what Matthews' advantage would be, it would be that he's a UFC vet, 12 UFC fights. Well, guess what? Who did Brady debut against? Court McGee. So I don't know that having UFC veteranship is enough to beat Brady. Brady's a winner. And while, again, it's always interesting to look to try to fade somebody at 13-0 because we know that you never really stay undefeated, I don't think that this is the spot. Jake Matthews, while he's 6-7 in his last that doesn't even make any sense. He's won 6 out of his last 7 fights. He's had one fight in the U.S. This is his second fight ever in the U.S. They don't let him come to the United States. He always stays in Australia. His head coach is his dad. You know, he's been in the UFC since he's 19. I like Brady by decision, honestly. Brady by decision plus 135 kind of speaks to me. Otherwise, if you get a little nervous, I also like Brady sub or decision minus 135. I don't think he gets knocks him out.
Yeah, that's probably not the most likely pathway. And this is one of those times where the line keeps shrinking. I think he might even be inside minus 200 now,
you know, which I think is super reasonable.
Yeah, and that's I mean, if you really wanted to, you could play it straight. But for me personally, because my units are smaller, you know, we'd like to try to find a parlay piece to make it plus money. So I think he's one of those guys that you could kind of look to parlay up.
Yeah, that money must be coming in on Matthews because Brady was minus 230 earlier in the week. So I still like Brady here.
I agree.
I think people are dog hunting.
I agree. And it's not that Matthews isn't a good fighter or can't come out like he did against Zhang Liang and, you know, really put on the pace. I think he even had a couple knockdowns there. But, you know, it seems like the majority of his fights where he steps up in competition, Anthony Rocco Martin, Kevin Lee, James Vick, and you had Andrew Holbrook in there, and it was a split decision. But I think that Brady, you know, technically is a step up from competition when you're facing Diego Sanchez and Emil Meek and Nachman.
He wasn't even relatively that impressive in those fights. He just won with his wrestling. And
he does enough, you know.
He does enough. He does enough. Once billed as a prospect that, you know, coming into the UFC at 19 years old, still kind of a prospect in some respects. So, I don't know. I like Brady.
Sure. That'll bring us on to our first of the 3 fights with City kickboxing fighters. You know, a big staple every time Adesanya is fighting on a card is to get, you know, a lot of the guys in. So we have Kennedy and Chukwu fighting the City kickboxing alum, Carlos Alberg. You see that Chukwu normally is giving up an experience, but he's 7-1 in MMA, where Olberg is only 3-0. Olberg does have plenty of kickboxing experience, 6-1. He does have 5 knockouts, you know, in kickboxing, but he did lose by leg kicks in a match that I saw, a guy that beat Alex Pereira. So just to give you an idea of the level that guy was. He was also a 1-0 pro boxer, and Olberg, recently a graduate of Dana White's Contender Series. You know, you could say the same for Kennedy, also a graduate of Dana White's Contender Series. Kennedy fighting out of Fortis MMA, so it's not like he's not training with some good fighters. I'm curious, are they setting Olberg up here for success?
I would think that they might be. I think they want to give him an interesting fight here. I think Nchuku has some sense of notoriety or fan following to him. Not with the casuals, obviously, but I think that there's a certain level of fans that do know him. And Ullberg is, a male model, pretty much. You know, Laura Sanko, when she was interviewing him, was kind of freaking out a little bit. But listen, I do really like Ullberg. I don't know that he warrants the price. So if you're feeling crazy, go for it. I'll be taking him, but I won't be betting him.
Yeah, I'll be picking him. I don't think Nchukwu is aggressive enough. And maybe the time off, he hasn't fought since August of 2019. That's a big factor when you're talking about betting against someone that's only 28 years old and fighting out of a good gym like Fortis. So you don't know the strides he's made. He could be more aggressive now. He could come out with a better game plan. And he could, put his punches together better. But, from what I at least saw on tape, that didn't impress me. I just think Ullberg has the power in his combos up top. He can counter. And I'm not sure Nchukwu is the guy's that really going to threaten him. He's only got 4 knockouts and 3 decisions. It's not like he's going to start grappling him and really controlling the fight that way. And if he does, that's probably his pathway to victory. So I would say Ullberg knockout plus 120 is a play if you want to keep it light and still have a little fun. That's where I'll be going. So getting along deeper here, we have our featured fight of the early prelims. Tim Elliott versus Jordan Espinoza, guys that size up pretty well. Elliott is going to be taller by an inch, but he's giving up 3.5 inches in the reach. They have equal leg reach. Elliott 4 years a senior to Espinoza. Elliott 5-9 in his UFC career, and on the surface really looks poor. But when you see that his last, bunch of losses have come to guys like Royval, Askarov, Figueiredo, Nguyen, Benavidez, Dodson. There's a couple other names on there that aren't so hot, but he does have wins against Benoit, which was a very close one. I thought, might have been able to go the other way. He did do well against De La Rosa with a submission, and he did well against Smolka as well. So that's a good win on his record. I think this is someone that could keep the fight close. He does have the tendency to gas out, and Espinoza also has the tendency to gas out. And I think it's going to be about which guy can get to his pace.
Yeah, I certainly like the way that you broke it down. Problem with Tim Elliott is that he's extremely inconsistent. I don't know which Tim Elliott is going to show up. He's sometimes struggled with weight, had looked bad at weight cuts. At the end of the day, he has a very weird style where he just likes to walk forward with his hands down and get punched in the face. He likes to move his head, but he gets hit a lot. And Espinoza could have the speed advantage. So stance-wise, he does stand very wide, Espinoza, but he does have the ability to switch stances. So he could kind of stick and move and just kind of keep hitting Elliott. That is something that does kind of worry me. That being said, Elliott did look decent in his last fight. Obviously, some people said it could have went the other way. This is a weigh independent fight for me, and kind of line dependent. If Elliott looks good at weigh-ins and I can get him at plus money, I'm taking it because I think that it's really kind of a dog or pass in this fight.
I can definitely agree with that. I came in looking to bet Elliott, and I come out thinking that I still probably am leaning that way. Espinoza doesn't use his wrestling well enough to me, and he gets submitted way too often. 4 submission losses on his record. Elliott's got 8 submission wins. And, maybe I love hunting for the submissions a little too much, but sometimes you can get those at a great price.
Yeah. I to me, if I see a focused lean on weight Tim Elliott, I'm with you. I'll be taking that.
Yeah, I think, a couple of his training partners fought recently. The most impressive being Derek Minner. That's a guy that's only 1 weight class bigger and a great, challenge in the grappling department. So if anyone was able to get Elliott ready for this, you know, they are in a similar timeline as when, as far as when they're fighting, and by submission is +500 for, you know, this type of scenario. I might not end up playing a side and just put like a quarter unit on Tim Elliott by submission, because if Espinoza gasses out, you know, it'll cash nicely. If not, I'm not too hurt.
Makes sense to me.
Great. So let's get on to our regular prelims. Now that we've, you know, dug deep on the early prelims, kicking it off, Rogerio Bantarin versus Kai Kara France. And Bantarin came in highly ranked in the flyweight division, I believe was at number 7 when he lost his most recent fight. And Kai Kara France has always been highly regarded in flyweight as well. Not that it's the deepest division, but we do have a couple guys that, you know, this should be a very exciting fight. You know, Bantarin actually going to have a 1-inch height advantage, which isn't something that he normally has. He's given up 2 inches of reach to Kai Kara France. And Bantarin is giving up a little bit of leg reach as well, you know, especially notable facing a guy like Kai Kara France, who has his point fighting style. You know, we saw him have, you know, a bunch of knockout wins coming into the UFC, only has 4 decision wins in the UFC. He's 4-2, Kai Kara France, in the UFC. He has lost by 1 submission, but all of his other 5 fights went the distance. Bontarine's going to come out, you know, his butt's lit on fire, just, you know, just like looking to get in for the takedown, get his big slams. He's very powerful. He's got great grappling, the black belt jiu-jitsu. France is only a blue belt. So to me, it's a question of if the small cage, if Bontarine can make something happen early, or are we going to see France be able to, you know, coast to that decision win off of, you know, banking 2 out of 3 rounds at minimum?
I think Kai Kara France is a pretty underrated fighter in a lot of respects, because his stats can be kind of middling. He's lost 2 of his last 3, but they were to Royval and Moreno, who I think are, you know, really going to be around in this division for a long time. I think that they're the cream of the crop, with a win over Tyson Nam sandwiched in between there. Bontorn, while, you know, he lost his last fight to Ray Borg, who, you know, did miss weight, he got taken down a lot. And obviously Ray Borg is a fantastic grappler, but even his win over Paiva was kind of like not very good, you know, with the doctor stoppage. I mean, his eye was swollen, no? Like, that, it could have went the other way.
Yeah, they actually stopped the fight twice. Actually, 3 times. It was crazy. So first, they checked the cut on Bontarin. Then they stopped the fight because they realized they didn't start it in the right position. Then once they get back in the right position, you know, Bontarin ends up, you know, getting the top and just grounding this big ground and pound strike and just opens up Paiva. And the ref stops in, you know, there's the 3rd stoppage, and boom, doctor calls it off immediately. It was definitely deserved.
So one thing Kai Kara France definitely has is very good takedown defense, 90%.
A lot of it's from his footwork.
So he has fantastic takedown defense, and Bontorin doesn't even necessarily have great takedown accuracy at 35%. That's concerning. So when you see those numbers, you figure the fight's going to take place on the feet, and you look at somebody like Bontorin, who lands 2.3 strikes per minute compared to Kai Kara France at 5.1 strike per minute. There's no way I'm taking Bontorin. I'm all over Kai Kara France by decision, and I can get that at plus money. I love it.
Yeah.
So as long as there's no craziness on the weigh-in, I'm taking Kai Kara France by decision +125. I like him at money line at -140. Fine. I possibly even a parlay piece, as long, again, as what I see what I want to see at weigh-ins. Why not? I really do like him.
Yeah, I would put him with Brady. You would get a pretty decent plus money price if you parlay those 2 guys together. And, you know, looking at Bontarin being a graduate of Dana White's Contender Series and Kai Kara France coming out of City Kickboxing, a lot more experience. We could see Bontarin go for those early takedowns, gas out, and then just get pieced up as we see Kara France dance around. Sounds like we're on similar pick here. Good to go. And onto a fight that I can't believe is this far down. Is this where we're talking Benavidez versus Askarov? Like, what? Like, is that really? We're talking the guy that just headlined two main events fighting for the 125 strap and in the number two ranked? Is that where he's at still? Joe Benavidez versus Askarov, 13-0-1.
Undefeated prospect.
Number three ranked flyweight. This is, so anyways, we made it to one of the better fights of the card from my viewpoint.
It really just shows how unbelievably and incredibly stacked this card is. And again, I know that this lingo is said a lot in the fight game, but this card could be up there for one of the best cards in the history of the UFC. And I really don't say that lightly.
Yeah, Benavidez is looking to make a return to respectability. You know, not the most, I guess you would say, appealing look, the way he was choked out after being knocked down multiple times in the first round. And, you know, I was happy to just see the fight be put to an end because it was obvious at that point to me that Figueiredo was just on another level. And, you know, Askarov is going to come in 2-inch height advantage, you know, 2-inch reach advantage. He's 9 years younger. And it seems like they're trying to set up Benavidez for a guy that's not going to be able to finish him so that he could feel better about, you know, going on his way out. That's the way I see it. I know he's looking for a win. I know he wants to do well. But, you know, as we see with some of these cuts in the UFC, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see them move on if Benavidez gets 30-27 here. I don't see a finish necessarily.
I think if he gets 30-27, I mean, if he looks like Tyron Woodley, like he comes out there and does nothing, yeah, I think that you're right. I do think that this is a little bit weigh independent for me. I really want to see how Joseph Benavidez looks. I know he's a muscular guy and that cut can be sometimes tough for him, but I'm all about fading public narrative. And the narrative is ready to write off Joseph Benavidez. And I understand why. He got beaten badly, but he got beaten badly by the best flyweight possibly of all time. I mean, up there with Mighty Mouse. I really hope that one day somehow they get that fight done, Mighty Mouse and Figueiredo. But that being said, I don't know. How is Askarov going to win the fight? We've kind of danced around a little bit. I don't think that we know that Askarov is not a finisher necessarily, at least since he's come to the UFC. Three UFC fights, you know, all of them have went to decision.
Yeah, well, you're not going to submit Benavidez unless you like nearly knock him out first. I think that's something that
we know. So that's the first part, right? So you're not going to submit Benavidez because his wrestling is good, right? Ask Henry Cejudo if Joseph Benavidez's wrestling is good enough. He struggled to take him down. So we know that he's quick. All right. And then what? So you're not knocking him out unless you just catch him and his chin is gone. So, I mean, again, you're telling me that he's really done and we've got like a serious like lawsuit problem on our hands, like with his chin. I don't necessarily think that that's the case. And again, as long as he doesn't have a bad weight cut and he looks sharp, for sure he's not getting KO'd. So then you're telling me this fight's going to decision. I like Benavidez. He's a better striker. He should have the speed advantage. He's more technical. We've seen Askarov get hurt before via the striking by Tim Elliott or Moreno. I'm not even sure that you know, that fight was a draw, but the judges were all over the place in that card. I have no idea that should have been a draw. So I'm, like I said, way independent, but I'm pretty sure I'm taking Benavidez money line and then +300 decision. Are you kidding me? Again, as long as he looks good, that's golden to me.
Yeah, I want to see if Askarov is really the bigger guy because I know being the younger guy, and I know Benavidez's history, I know his 11 decision victories and 4 decision defeats tell you that he's able to push the pace and go the distance. So I don't want to argue with that. What I do want to say is generally when you see this big of an age differential, especially with a guy as talented as Askarov, I know we want to try to knock him for a bunch of stuff. This is someone that's 13-0-1, and He is a master of sports and freestyle wrestling and combat sambo. It's, you know, he has, you know, an ability to him to be able to spam takedowns. And I know he's not successful all the time on those takedowns. In fact, his takedown numbers are terrible. You know, some of the worst as far as accuracy goes. But to me, that also spells control time. And I think he does well controlling the wrists. And I think he does well, you know, doing stuff in the clinch. And, you know, against a guy like Pantoja, who still has, you know, a lot of his prime athletic abilities, I do think that it's possible Figueiredo could have broken Benavidez. But that's why I'm not playing inside the distance. I think Benavidez still has a bunch of fight in him. The scrambles are going to be crazy. Benavidez might get into some good positions too, but he's not beyond, you know, being controlled by a bigger fighter that isn't searching for a finish. You know, I think that's something that plays into Askarov's hands.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I guess if you don't like either side, you can play the fight to go the distance minus 164.
And that's parlayable.
I was about to say, it's definitely a parlay piece if you're looking for one. So yeah, I certainly disagreement. I guess at the moment, I want to see weigh-ins.
Certainly fair. And something we learned very recently is that you can't make the bet until you see them on the scale. And it just hurt me that I try to say these things and I go against it and it comes back to bite me every time. So just wait till you see the weigh-in and then get your bet out. A little bit of line movement won't kill you in the long run. What will is a bad weight cut. Our next fight, a big contender fight in the bantamweight division, Song Yadong versus Kyler Phillips. And talk about an experience discrepancy. You know, they're both extremely young to be fighting in the UFC at 23 and 24 years old. Song Yadong, the younger fighter, who's, you know, they match up very well, but Kyler Phillips does have a 5-inch reach advantage. So that's something to keep an eye on for someone that's willing to dance around a little bit and strike from the outside coming out of the MMA lab. Song Yadong out of Team Alpha Male, he's their big-time prospect now. And I think we've seen his win record get padded in the UFC a little bit by some, you know, some helpful decisions by the judges. I do think that they were close fights. But Vera, man, I really thought Chito Vera won that fight. When I heard unanimous decision, I thought my bet cashed. And you know what? That might sound like I'm biased, but for the most part, I'm able to admit my defeats.
For the most part. No, I agree. I think that the win over Chito Vera is weak at best. I don't think it was necessarily a robbery. I do think it was kind of a robbery. Like I said, I don't try to sound too sour. I do think it was a bit of a robbery. Then you look at the majority draw versus Cody Stamann, not necessarily his best showing, but he was fighting a guy, you know, probably just outside the top 15. So Yadong has really been, it really is a top prospect. As is Phillips. Phillips has looked incredible against mediocre competition like you're supposed to. I don't know. I find myself on Phillips, who's kind of become a little bit of the public dog this week. I don't like what I've seen from Yadong. And again, that may sound square, obviously, against decent competition, but I don't like necessarily what I've seen. Obviously, he's got good striking, but I think Phillips has better striking with longer reach. I think he might be quicker, better on the ground, more powerful. I don't know.
I think the guys that are going to give Phillips the most trouble are the control grapplers. And we saw that when he lost to Brad Katona by majority decision. I think it was either on the Ultimate Fighter or some regional scene. I have to look back at that. But he showed an improved ability on the ground in his UFC fights. And I think that he's someone, you know, he's got the brown belt in jiu-jitsu and he's shown some offensive ability to get the fight to the mat. You know, timing his takedowns. You see Yadong coming in with a little bit of reckless abandon with his boxing sometimes. He's got great timing, great hands. Yadong is a very fun fighter to watch. And, you know, in a different fight, I might be picking him. In this specific one, the reason why I found myself on the underdog just comes down to the gas tank at the end of it. I think this fight probably does go to decision, but I think the output of Phillips might just be higher and he'll be able to land the higher variety of striking.
I really do like who Phillips has been training with at MMA Lab with Casey Kenney,
Sean O'Malley,
Sugar Sean O'Malley,
and
a bunch of
Mario Bautista also on this card. I mean,
Mario Bautista.
Those are four killers in the gym together.
Yeah. So that's who I'm going with. I agree with everything you said.
Yeah. He had his brothers even come out for this training camp just to be there. I think they were doing some type of podcast together. You know, seems like, he's comfortable. A little bit weird with some of the Matrix stuff, but you can't fault the
guy. It's his nickname. Leave him alone.
Nah, I don't know. Like the whole red pill and talking about Yadong coming into his Matrix and the Octa. I don't know. Whatever. It was a little
whatever.
Weird,
he's
yeah.
Listen, man. He knocks him out. He can talk all the smack he wants. If that's his shtick. That's his shtick. I can dig it. And listen, with these light guys, man, way independent. I need to see how these guys look. Phillips could look terribly drained and Yadong could look amazing and I would switch. So I really need to see all these weigh-ins.
Yeah, because Kyler Phillips, we're talking about his gas tank, but if he's compromised on the scale, then what advantage is that for the cardio when I think his best path is to win decision? So let's wait till we see it. And, you know, it's possible you could flip to a Yadong KO if it looks right. So getting to our featured prelim, we have.
Can't even believe this is a featured prelim. This is a co-main event of, or even a, this could be a fight of the night, a really bad fight of the night main event, but it could definitely be any co-main event anywhere.
Yeah. You got Dominic Cruz, you know, the Dominator coming in against Casey Kenney, someone that had one of the best years for any fighter in 2020, you know, rivaling the run of Kevin Holland minus a couple names, but he took out Nathaniel Wood to top it all off. And I was just seriously impressed, you know, round one submission over Smolka, just a complete obliteration of Aletang Ely. And then, you know, Wood was an extremely close fight, but he took that fight on short notice, flew home, flew back to Fight Island. Come on.
3 weeks after he fought Aletang, yeah, he fights Wood. That's crazy.
That's a hell of an October. So, you know, we're okay. Let's get into it, because Dominic Cruz, is he going to be the person to stop Casey Kenney's rise? And the answer to me lies in his inactivity and him being a little bit stuck in the past with his style. I didn't really see that many changes in the Cejudo fight. I saw him getting knocked by leg kicks. Yeah, I saw his movement, but it's not a puzzle anymore. You know, Kenny rivals the movement. Kenny has the defensive wrestling. You know, he got taken down by Merab, but who doesn't get taken down by Merab? Dodson? But, you know, he still got controlled and he still got dominated. So, you know, it's not a knock on Kenny when you look at his career statistics for takedown defense in the UFC, because you have that Merab fight. So if you take that out, I know you take it out, whatever. Merab is a top, 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 top level wrestler. You know, Cruz, I wouldn't say that Cruz is the same level of wrestler that Merab is, just from a gas tank perspective and a domination perspective. So anyways, let's not do too much MMA math, right?
Definitely not.
So we have, where I see, just a showcase. We got, you know, featured prelim. We saw this with Aspinall. We saw this, you know, with Dawkins recently. I know we're talking different weight classes, but the UFC has been pushing their young guys and the ones that they want to be building up their divisions. And this could get Kenny, you know, moving real up in the rankings.
I don't think that's what this is at all, man. Like, not even a little bit. I think that Dominic, like, literally at all. I think Dominic Cruz is a well-respected, like, Hall of Fame fighter, announcer, and they let him pick whoever he wanted, right? He got to pick Henry Cejudo, right, on his return fight. And then after that, he gets to pick who he wants.
Yeah.
So of who he's, as they have him ranked, 11th, right? So he doesn't take Rob Font, right? He doesn't take a fight against Jose Aldo, right? He doesn't take Marlon Moraes or Frankie Edgar or Pedro Munhoz. He doesn't wait for a Sun Tzu. He doesn't take Jimmy Rivera. He doesn't take Duvall Shdilly or Stamen. or Vera or Yudong. So I don't know, like, what does that say? That, like, he kind of maybe found something specific in Kenny that he is picking out. He didn't even take a top 15 guy this time around. It's just, it's interesting. And obviously, like you've said, Casey Kenny has a ton of steam and he's looked really good. And he's, I'm so conflicted. I like Casey Kenny. I think his leg kicks should just kick the knees out from Dominic Cruz. I mean, if that's not your game plan, I mean, his knees are going to be wrapped to shit. If your game plan is not kick the shit out of Dominic Cruz's knees, I don't know what you're doing.
You got to stop the movement.
I mean, again, and how well can he even move at 36, three ACL surgeries, a groin tear?
Yeah, it's not going to be that. It's where I just default to, you know, it's not like Casey Kenny is, you know, 2-1 in the UFC and they're giving him this shot. Like this guy right now, 5-1. And I think one of the reasons why Cruz took this opponent is there's not really a threat of getting knocked out and they're going to put on a show. So
listen, Dominic Cruz thinks that he can't get knocked out by Casey Kenny. He may have another thing coming because he may not have the one shot knockout power, but Casey Kenny could outvolume him that hard, especially if he gets hurt. I don't know what shape Dominic Cruz is in. Only Dominic Cruz and his camp truly know that. I'm on Casey Kenny.
Yeah.
By decision, plus 155, like a money line as well.
Yeah.
It's tough, man. I guess I could see myself going the other way. I don't even think Dominic Cruz will look good at weigh.
No, you're fooling yourself. You think he's going to look good. His body is like the weirdest thing ever. I think it's, you know, it's good enough to be able to play minus 134 on Kenny because it's not, you're not talking minus 200 here. I mean, you're just saying that you think a little over 50% of the time you think Kenny's going to win. I think at this stage of Cruz's career, I think that's the case.
I guess when you say it like that, why not?
Yeah. So, hey, let's get on to the main card. Yeah, we did a pretty decent job getting through there. And we got a banger to kick us off. You know, something that could have been, like you keep saying, a main event on another card.
This absolutely could have been a main event anywhere.
Yeah, and especially with how they're trying to build up the light heavyweight division. I mean, any of these guys could be challengers next. You got Thiago Santos, 21-8 versus Alexander Rakic, 13-2. Man, this is such an explosive matchup. You know,
I cannot even believe it's on this card. I hope fucking Corona or weigh-ins don't take it away from us.
Oh, God, did you just do it to us? Oh, no.
Did I drink it?
All right. Anyways, we'll get to that. We'll see. But, oh, man,
it's the loom. It's the elephant in the room. We know that it's a possibility. Why do you think they have 15 fights?
Yeah, I'm surprised.
There's no way we're getting out of here scot-free. Listen, sacrifice whatever you have to sacrifice. Do whatever you got to do, but I don't think there's any way we're getting out of here scot-free. Yeah. Unless they just bury the COVID test. Let's be real.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, I mean, they're talking about going back to Texas right now. Anyways, so Thiago Santos giving up 2 inches of height, 2 inches of reach. You know, Rakic going to be the much bigger guy in there. As far as leg reach, you know, very notable in this matchup. Alexander Rakic, 46-inch versus Santos, 42.5. I think Rakic, you know, is 7 years younger in this matchup. He is 5-1 in the UFC, so I don't think he has a lack of experience like I talked about with Casey Kenny.
And that Volkan Ozdemir loss, I don't know if that was so much of a loss.
That was so close, and I think the visible damage to his calf is what really sold, you know, the judges on it. And that's not to take away from them because that is one of the biggest factors when you're scoring fights is damage. So and they even say like visible stuff, you know, if you read the actual rules of the scoring, a lot of times it makes sense what they're looking at. A lot of times it fucking doesn't, you know, judging a topic for another day. But yeah, Rakic, you know, he had his deal with the leg kicks in that fight. And I think that was his real welcome to the UFC moment against Ozdemir. You know, Santos coming off a double ACL surgery, meniscus surgery. He had to relearn how to walk. And when he came back, this is a guy that was throwing like 30, 40 leg kicks in a fight per fight and you know, was going crazy, hurting people. John Jones couldn't even walk out of the octagon on his own two feet after they fought, but neither could Santos because he needed to completely reconstruct his two knees. And when he came back against Teixeira, where were the leg kicks?
And listen, I heard in some of the interviews that maybe he came back a little early, but that being said, it's only been, what, 4 months since the Glover Teixeira fight?
Yeah.
That's a little soon.
Yeah. So
he got pulverized in that fight.
Yeah. And, you know, we see that he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, but we've also seen what can happen when you get arrested.
He's like a turtle off his back. He has no idea what to do when he's on his back. He might be a black belt in jiu-jitsu when he's on top, but not when he's on bottom.
And that's very fair. And he overcommits a lot of times. Whether it's on the feet, he puts a lot of power into his strikes, or whether it's on the mat, when you saw him go for those ground and pound, you know, he gets swept, he'll get reversed, but I don't think it'll even get to there. I think it, when I'm looking at this fight, I see the longer guy in Rakic. I see a very experienced boxer. I see someone that uses his range well defensively. And while he's gotten caught before, I do think, you know, he has a lot of experience and, you know, he's used it to his advantage to really get better. And, you know, we've seen the leg kicks that he was dealing out. I mean, he fractured Anthony Smith's leg and then also has shown the ability to completely dominate with wrestling.
This fight's extremely interesting for a lot of different reasons. Santos is kind of due for a win, and that's kind of why he makes me a little bit nervous. He, you know, could have that veteranship, right, to kind of be a little bit patient and beat Santa beat Rakic on the counters. But that being said, I do like Rakic. I am worried about Santos' long-term health with his knees. The overall pace, I think, is what could sell it. Like, I think this is an I know that this is an extremely close fight. I think what makes a huge difference will be the pace. And Rakic has a higher pace and a higher output. And that's why I'm on Rakic.
Yeah, and ultimately, plus 260 by decision. I don't know that either of these guys are going to finish each other, given, you know, that I haven't seen a recent knockout on either of their records. The most recent ones, I think, came when Santos was moving up weight, you know, getting away from middleweight. So I think, you know, he's fully filled out. I haven't seen any chin issues. So I think, you know, the easy play would be like, oh, Rakic by knockout. But I think he might do a lot more wrestling than people are expecting. And I think a decision at plus 260, that tickles it.
That's a crazy thought. I mean, there's a lot of different other ways to slice that pie if you think that too. Over 1.5 at minus 142. Fight to go the distance just in general at plus 172 if you don't want to pick a side.
Yeah, those are great plays also, but it sounds like at this point we're both picking Rakic. Let's get on to our next one.
Oh, speaking of the next one, I was thinking if you wanted to, I think I might. You might want to parlay Rakic and the next fight, Makhachev, plus 104.
Wow. Yeah, and listen, we will save you a little bit of time because on this fight, it's pretty cut and dry what the outcomes are.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, Islam Makhachev, 18-1. He's going to come in 2-inch height advantage, half an inch reach advantage, 5.5-inch leg reach advantage, and 3 years younger than Dober. Dober, been in the UFC a while, and you know, we've seen a guy that's apt to get the finish. Those 9 submission wins on his record, I think you can wipe him off. He's only a purple belt in BJJ, and I think a lot of times that he's gotten a submission is when he's hurt someone. So I'm not going to look for a submission in this fight. And, you know, his 7 knockout wins in his career, he's got 5 of them in the UFC, right? So I think that he definitely is game to make something happen on the feet. But Makhachev is, you know, highly regarded for so many reasons. He took his first round knockout already in his career. So I think if you want to be safe and stay away from, you know, an inflated line, maybe with Makhachev, and maybe it's not even, maybe he looks like minus 600.
That's what I was thinking. I'm not sure that it's inflated. I'm really not. I love Drew Dober as a person, as a fighter. I think he's awesome. All I want to do is be on him here. Believe me, I don't necessarily like Makhachev as a person. That being said, Dober's three KOs in a row are a little fluky, as he's not necessarily a finisher or historically a KO artist by any means. And let's be real, his only way to win this fight is by knockout. Makhachev, yes, he's been knocked out before, so that is pretty much the only way. But that was like, whatever it was, his second fight in the UFC. He's learned a lot since then. He's a young guy.
Yeah, back in 2015.
So does Dober have a punching chance? Absolutely. I certainly think he has a puncher's chance. If you want to take a flyer on that, I don't hate it at all. Like I said, I'm a big Dober fan. Islam has the Khabib-esque wrestling. He has an unbelievable knack of not letting fighters throw strikes. He has absorbed less than one strike per minute, which is, I believe, the lowest in UFC history with the amount of fights that he has. Dober, unfortunately, as well, doesn't really have a huge background, a huge career in wrestling. So he has a relatively weak takedown defense, has been controlled on the ground and taken down by lesser fighters. This looks like a Makhachev stealing his thunder.
Yeah, and I'm just going to say, if you want to take it a little safe, you know, I would say you could parlay Makhachev, but if you want to say fight doesn't go the distance plus 128 in case you think something might happen either side, yeah, I think I might play that too.
Yeah, I don't necessarily love that anything's going to happen. I definitely don't think that Dober gets finished, and I'm not very convinced at all that he gets the finish, unfortunately. Like I said, I would like to bet Dober personally, but can't do it here. So I like Makhachev by decision. You get to mitigate all that money line by your most likely outcome of victory. Or like I said, I kind of like the Rakic Makhachev parlay I threw out there.
Great. So let's get to the first of our three title fights.
So excited for this. I mean, it might be the best title fight of the three. Yeah, to be quite honest.
As far as it even matchup, at least on paper here, yeah, I could definitely agree with that. So you have Piotr Jan, not 100% sure how I'm supposed to be saying it, but I do think it's probably Piotr. He's matches up very evenly in the height, but Sterling has a 4-inch reach advantage and a 1-inch leg reach advantage, which, you know, I do think is going to play a little bit of factor, at least early in the fight. I do think Sterling is going to not shoot immediately for a takedown. He's going to have to set it up a little first because Jan's got great footwork. You know, both these guys, highly decorated. You know, we got Master of Sports in Boxing and MMA for Jan, which means about 60 to 70 amateur fights. And, you know, he's got a blue belt in jiu-jitsu, which he doesn't have to necessarily go back to because he's also got that combat sambo a little bit like type of style where, you know, he does all these things, you know, countering takedowns and stuffing and shooting the hips back. And he just seems really well versed in defensive grappling and defensive wrestling. So I don't think Sterling's going to have the easiest time, you know, getting in there. But the path to victory for Sterling, stay on the outside with those kicks, avoid the boxing range. And then when he does want to get in there, you know, change levels or get in the clinch, go for the back take, and that's his pathway.
Yeah, I the writing's pretty much on the roll for Sterling. He really needs a submission win. If it goes to the distance, which I think it does, I don't think Sterling has as good of a chance to win. He doesn't have as much pace. He doesn't do as much pressuring as you alluded to, staying on the outside. Jan has already showed that championship grit in those Aldo rounds, those later rounds versus Aldo. You know, Jan has the pressure advantage, the pace advantage. I had the overall better striking advantage. He obviously went to American Top Team to fix something in his game, whether that be the grappling or some submission game, whatever it was, he went to American Top Team to do some work. Sure, he looks good. Everybody that comes out of American Top Team has good cardio. I think this fight goes the distance. I don't think there's a finish. Sterling has shown a pretty strong chin other than his crazy loss to Marlon Moraes.
Yeah,
if I can get Petr Yan plus money, I am. Oh my God, that Petr Yan plus money line. Oh my God, that would be. I'm dreaming. But I really like Yan by decision plus 280. I think that might be one of the best plays of the evening. It's going to be close, mind you. I also like the fight to go to the distance plus 120. But I mean, I do really like Yan here.
Yeah. Taking the bets right out of my mouth. You could also say Yan knockout or on points minus 110 if you think there's a chance, you know, once again, by accumulation, that's how he normally does it. So the one thing I would say is don't be surprised here because Sterling has shown he's been able to get taken down before in the past. And Yan has shown catching kicks, trips. He's got that Muay Thai background and he also has shown some offensive wrestling before. So do you think he doesn't want to, you know, make a statement here to Aljo? Like, listen, you know, you talk all this garbage about, you know, being able to grapple. I mean, when you watch the way Yan goes against Magomedov in those two fights, and that's his only loss of his career was in the first matchup, split decision, and you know, it was kind of questionable because Yan did a lot more damage on the feet and Magomedov did a lot more controlling. And, you know, we saw a big time adjustment the second fight. And I just think that Yan has that experience to flip the tables on him.
I think when you're going to look back on Yan's career in the UFC, I think you're going to see that he's going to be up there as one of the very best bantamweights that the UFC has had. So I think that this is just another stepping stone for him. I think Aljo is probably one of the best fighters in the UFC that's not a champion. I think, yes, can he get it done? I just wish he had something in the striking department. If he had some crazy left hook that we needed to worry about, he's got nothing to offer in the striking department. And it's other than the, you know, the leg kicks from afar, it's not going to be enough, I don't think.
Yeah. As far as like the one shot knockout type of deal or the maintaining pace, like it's not that he can't box, it's not that he can't strike. It's just at the same level.
He's so talented.
Yeah, right. I think just to clarify, because like you know, the way we say stuff sometimes, I don't want to come off as disrespectful because you know at the same time you hop in the gym with any of these guys and we look like complete fools. So, but the overall point is that there are differences in the level of striking, whereas I think that the grappling is a lot more even than people are letting on. So it sounds like we're both on Yan here.
Absolutely.
So let's get on to our second title fight. In the featherweight division, like we said, Nunes defending her second belt that she claimed victory over Cyborg. Huge.
Yeah, hasn't fought at this weight class since, you know, late December 2018.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested to see how Nunes looks and feels, really 10 pounds heavier 2 years later with a baby. You know, I don't know how motivated she is for this fight.
Oh, man. See, for me, I see Nunes as like, you know, for her, she has a tough weight cut to 135. And I think she wanted to prove a point that she wanted to go and defend the belt back down there at that weight class and not just be like the two division champ who moves up and never goes back down. So she got those hard weight cuts out of the way. And if the UFC was able to flesh out the division better at 145, we might see her make an extended run there. But I don't know if that's necessarily happening.
I'm not sure I agree with that at all. I think that she prefers the 135 division. I think that, I mean, as you see, as big as Megan Anderson is, like I'm not sure that Amanda Nunes is necessarily a natural 145er.
Well, I don't know that you necessarily have to be a natural anything when, you know, you look at the skills brought to the table. And I think, you know, Megan Anderson, she's huge, 6 foot, 72 inch reach. She's got the 4 inch height advantage, 3 inch reach advantage. She's going to pack some power and she's going to be the bigger fighter out there. And she could give her some issues in the stand-up. I'm not saying that this is going to be, you know, Nunes walking forward and knocking her out in the first minute. I think she would be a little naive to think that Where I see the difference being is on the ground. And Nunes is not afraid to put her ego aside and just make things happen. Because, you know, she starts getting touched up by Durandamy. She shoots. And it's ugly. She does the control game. But Durandamy had increased to a brown belt since their first fight. So we saw that she was able to avoid getting finished on the mat. Megan Anderson, I mean, first round submission of Felicia Spencer back in 2019. I mean, man, and then you're telling me that I could get a method of victory for Amanda Nunes where you're looking at like minus 1200 right now. I can get it plus 210 for submission.
Yeah, I mean, let's be real. Megan Anderson's best win was the fact that she kicked Kat Zingano in the eye. So
yeah, well, she had that beautiful right cross. Like, it's not that she doesn't have a game, you know?
Oh, come on. But it was against, like you said, Norma Dumont and Zahara Farim. I mean, there is nobody in this division. And I know I kind of sounded a little harsh on Amanda Nunes before, but I'm really just trying to play devil's advocate. And that's all you can do when you're a minus 1,000 underdog. Yeah. I won minus 1,000 favorite. So I do like Amanda Nunes here. I think I've heard a lot of sharp people say the submission. I do think the submission sounds good. I like over 1.5 rounds, minus 112.
That's cool.
Maybe I'm crazy. I
think that there's a good chance of that. I mean, especially in women's MMA, to take such early finishes. I know we're talking about the GOAT, you know, Nunes.
You know what? Honestly, but that being said, as I say that, the last four of Megan Anderson's fights in a row have ended in the first round. So no, I don't necessarily love that over 1.5 at all. I really don't. The concerning thing for me is when you look at the Felicia Spencer fight, because she got taken down right away and submitted. So that's all you have to do. Even if she slips or something, the fights could be pretty much over because Amanda Nunes will just jump on top of her.
Definitely.
So no, I Amanda Nunes all the way. I from a betting perspective, I may really just completely stay away. Yeah, Nunes plus 210. By sub, if you want to read the tea leaves. I mean, even if you're trying to, want to mitigate your odds, you want Nunes by KO or sub minus 370. I will probably be staying away from this fight from a betting perspective.
Yeah, the thing that made me jump to submission is that Norma Dumont, you know, we know the Spencer fight happened, but Norma Dumont comes out there and throws her in the clinch and is shooting for a takedown for a solid 2 minutes straight. And she came in, she missed weight terribly, and then just completely gasses out. And after having like 2 minutes of control time, she just gets popped. And you know, that doesn't really speak to the entire, you know, game of Megan Anderson. So you see her get taken down by Holly Holm. You see her get taken down by Felicia Spencer. You see her get controlled in the clinch by Dumont. You know, Nunes is powerful. She's going to be close to those hips being the shorter fighter. I mean, that's fine. That's fine. You know, we're talking a smaller cage here. She's going to be able to close the distance and I think control it. So it sounds like we got Nunes.
I think the only way Megan Anderson wins is if Amanda Nunes is beating herself. And I don't want to be disrespectful to Megan Anderson, but like I'm saying, you catch her with a KO shot. She looks sloppy. She's really not mentally there. She's really not like, I mean, again, she has her getting psyched up for this. And it seems a little obvious. It has to be, it's all mental. She has to mentally want this fight so bad because it's not the money that was driving her. This is not a GOAT fight. You know what I mean? Like, this is not versus Valentina 3. This is not versus Cyborg 2. This is not Rousey. You know what I mean? This is not a big fight like that. This is against somebody that beat two whoever's to come here and fight for this. So this is all intrinsic motivation for her to keep winning, keep dominating, be the absolute GOAT. She has to want it really badly. And I know that sometimes it can be tough for people to turn it on. So I really think that that's the way that she would lose. But I am going with Nunes here.
Great. I wouldn't hate you for putting a little, you know, baby bet on the underdog, you know?
A little something out there.
Yeah, you know.
I wouldn't hate anybody for that.
It is a high-level fight, and we are talking about a gigantic spread, especially in MMA when you close those cage doors. So I don't want to completely disrespect the chances when I myself might be throwing out a quarter unit on the money line.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about a fight that's difficult to bet?
Oh.
Oh my goodness, this main event. I cannot wait. This is incredible stuff they have together. Listen, would I like to, as a purist, do I think Glover Teixeira should be having a shot? I do, you know, and what's the dark cloud looming over it if it's not Glover Teixeira? It's Daddy not being home. It's John Jones, the true light heavyweight champion, not fighting. But that being said, I mean, this is so, so, so exciting. Israel Adesanya is pretty much the UFC's, you know, top seller in terms of pay-per-views that isn't Conor McGregor and Khabib, right?
Yeah, I mean, so the way I see it is Adesanya definitely made a calculated move, and, you know, we'll see where John Jones' future actually ends up taking him, because he's been pretty indecisive in the past, and it's not like he's bigger than he's ever been before. I know he packed on some weight, but it's not like he hasn't come into fights muscular. But let's focus on this one, because I think Jan Blachowicz deserves his due. You know, he is the headliner. He is the name that we're saying first, because he is the one being challenged for his title. You know, normally we see Adesanya come in with the huge height and reach advantage. We're talking 4 inches of height, 8 inches of reach. You know, that he had that on Costa. He had that on Whitaker. Now, coming into this fight, you know, Adesanya, 6'4", Blachowicz, 6'2". You know, he's shorter, but then you see the reach, 80-inch for Adesanya, 78 for Blachowicz. I mean, that's not giving up that much at this point.
The bigger reach, and thicker for Blachowicz, yeah, too.
The leg reach is the same. You know, we see Adesanya is 6 years younger, and the biggest thing that we will focus on is his athleticism, footwork, movement, and ability to you know, work off the fly. Because he has a game plan, he comes out there, but the way he reads his opponent is just different. But I think where we will see something different than any other opponent that Adesanya has faced to this point, a lot of people are focusing on the size difference. A lot of people are focusing on, you know, being in the new division. Jan Blachowicz checks kicks. He's a Muay Thai guy. He checks kicks, and he knows what he's doing when his opponent's throwing kicks. Jan Blachowicz throws kicks. We saw what happens to Dom Reyes' side. So what happens when Adesanya goes to throw a leg kick and it gets checked? Because I don't think that that's out of the question.
Those body kicks from Jan Blachowicz are brutal. And I got to be honest, Adesanya has not really faced that much volume as of late. His staring contest with Romero and drunk Paulo Costa, I mean, he's kind of, it's been a little bit soft for him the last two fights. The Whitaker fight, he tasted a little blood, right? Like that was a masterclass performance.
Mm-hmm.
He needs a signature performance against Jan Blachowicz here, and I think it could be a war.
Yeah, I mean, you think Adesanya doesn't know that John Jones is going to be fucking tweeting out during this main event? You think Adesanya doesn't know that, like, everyone's paying attention to what his next move is? Because he's the next big thing in the UFC. I mean, I'll be honest with you. When I first started watching a few years ago and really getting into it, this was the guy that caught my eye. This was, like, immediately the person that just, you could tell was different in there. And Blachowicz, once again, we're not taking anything away from him. He deserves to be here. He's the perennial underdog. He's the hangman, you know, he's coming
he's
out.
He's been underdog in what? He's been underdog in what? Eight of his last 11 fights? Nine of his last 12 or something?
It's chronic disrespect. And you know we love chronic, but not in this term, you know?
Not in the terms of disrespect. We never like disrespect.
No, we're good guys. Come on.
Listen, Jan is an absolute savage. I cannot wait for this fight. I think that Izzy should be quicker. I think that Izzy will maintain distance better. I think that Jan could start to feel the pressure like he did in that Santos fight to start putting on some action. And that could leave him to be punished. Because at the end of the day, Jan has so much to prove. And of course, Izzy does too. But, you know, if Jan loses, he just kind of falls back to obscurity and he never really should have had the title and all the things that will be said. So I'm sure he's going to feel a lot of internal pressure to turn up the energy. Whereas Izzy doesn't really mind sitting back, slowing it down, letting the fight come to him and picking it apart. So I think in terms of a betting perspective, I really like pretty much the overs. I think this, I'm at least hoping that this fight goes for a while. Fight to start round 3 minus 136. Fight to start round 4 plus 120. Izzy by decision plus 260. I mean, shit, talk about chronic disrespect. Jan by decision plus 850. That's crazy. That's crazy. It's more, listen, I'm taking Izzy, and I know you're a big Izzy fan, but Jan by decision, I think, is much more likely than plus 850. I mean, come on.
Well, when you break down the probability of how things play out, the him winning a decision basically tells you that he did one of two things. He stung Izzy and started controlling the pace that he wanted, because Izzy's going to control the pace of this fight. You could look at whatever numbers you want, but the second he steps in there with someone, he controls the pace. It's just how it goes.
You're right.
And then, you know, Jan, he's going to have to grapple, if anything, but Izzy's so good in the clinch. Like, he's good with the way that he fights for his underhooks. He's good with the way that he tails out of there. He peels away. He's really good at that stuff. And yo, he almost had Gastelum in a triangle choke. I know he wasn't able to really lock it in, but
he almost lost that fight to Gastelum. Listen, he pulled out one of the best fifth round performances you could ever ask for, but it was 2-2. It's 2-2 going into that fifth round. And again, that's where he showed the championship grit. That's where he showed he's the special force that he is. But I mean, come on, man. You're tempting fate, 2-2.
Yeah, and so the thing that I am a little bit cautious of as far as betting the over myself is that I've actually been burned a few times here by Izzy and playing later knockouts, playing the over with him. And, like, honestly, sometimes he really gets underestimated as far as, like, power isn't always looking at a guy and who the biggest, strongest muscles are, because obviously Jan, you know, he combines how big and strong his muscles are with his technique and timing. But Izzy, I mean, when you talk about technique, when you talk about the ability to time when someone's coming in and meet them at the end of your punch at out of range and catch them with a combination when they're not looking. So, you know, when you look at his fight and you really think, okay, how is this going to play out? Jan overreacts to feints. So that's something that's extremely concerning with the best feinter in the UFC. You have Israel Adesanya is going to be the faster guy. He's going to draw out reactions. And to me, I just see either way, this fight's ending in a knockout.
You don't think it goes the distance.
No, you look at his fight against Santos and it's crazy. Santos landed the Izzy combination that he landed on Whitaker. So he's walking back and Jan's coming in with his combo and he hits him with that counter left, right on the button and just drops Jan. Like, I know Izzy saw that on tape. I know Bearman saw that on tape. I know that they're coming in looking to draw out a reaction. You got to frustrate this guy. You got to make him come after you. And he's shown the ability to get countered.
I think that takes time though. I think that takes time. That's why I like maybe the fight to start round 3.
And you can say that all you want, but like if he feints him and he goes and he checks a leg kick and then he goes to the, and he gets that question mark kick, I mean, that could drop someone at any point.
I know that it's going to be a close fight. I know that the coaching of Izzy is going to point out all the things that Jan has really missed, because they are at elite at studying the tape and formulating a game plan. When you really look at it, it's kind of interesting. What is it? 6 of his 7 fights in a row for Jan have not went the distance. I think that's interesting.
Yeah. So I just end up on Izzy knockout plus 135.
5 of 7. But yeah, Izzy by knockout.
not a bad bet at all. I like Izzy. I am really quite nervous. I mean, imagine he's a double champ. Is he going to take a middleweight fight?
I think that given his stature, he could kind of fight at whatever weight class he needed to, because he could get up to 220 pretty easily. I mean, we talk about him being light and everything. I mean, the guy does.
I said cut. Middleweight, by the way.
Yeah, no, I know. He cuts weight.
No, but I meant to say lightweight.
You mean light heavyweight? Oh, yeah. Does he defend anything at light heavyweight? Sure. I think the second he wins that light heavyweight title, you know, I think Jones, if Ngannou wins, shout out Phil the MMA dude. But, like, I could totally see Jones just coming back and not wanting to fight Ngannou for the heavyweight title when he could just go and fight Izzy for the light heavyweight.
Whoa, tipping your hand a little bit. You think that Ngannou's going to beat Stipe?
Well, I think it's a possibility, but we'll get to that one down the line.
Yeah, you tipped your hand, Val.
Ooh. Well, I said out of the possibility that that happens, because I'm not sold either way on that.
But listen, and that being said, I'm not sure if I even agree with that. Let's be real. Francis beats Stipe. Why wouldn't Stipe get a trilogy fight? He's earned that.
Yeah, so what? Jones is just going to step in there and get to fight whoever he wants at heavyweight after not fight? I don't know. The whole thing is a little hokey. So anyways, focusing on this week, I think Izzy gets the job done.
I think so too. I really like to play devil's advocate with you, and I felt like I had to play a little bit harder, as the audience can't see, as you sit here in your Adesanya sweatshirt.
Hey, I told them I was wearing it.
I didn't. I might be a little chronic. I might have forgot. Listen, I did feel the need to push a little bit harder. I do have some earlier plays out on Adesanya that we had parlayed from like multi fights from like even a month ago.
Yeah,
Kamaru Usman. So we had parlayed Kamaru Usman and Adesanya. So I did want to really make sure we covered all the bases. But I really think what you touched on about the feints, I think that's beautiful scouting, and I think that that's quintessential to Adesanya's game plan. And I think that that's exactly how that goes down.
Great. So sounds like we covered it all. We made it another huge fight card. Let's see how many get taken off due to Corona, how many get taken off due to failed weight cuts. Maybe the MMA guys let us have this one. Like, please.
Let us have this. I think we've sacrificed Khamzat Chimaev to the MMA gods.
Oh, God.
So we can have this card be okay.
Oh, God. I hope he's okay. So, hey, let's wrap it up. Well, I'm glad that you guys made it this far, because this really is, like we said so many times, probably going to be one of the most exciting cards of the year. And as we look back, depending how things go, maybe all time.
I think that this is one of the first fight cards in a while that actually has some really parlayable pieces. I'm really, really excited to watch this fight in terms of a sporting perspective and a fan perspective. I'm excited to bet it from a gambling perspective. I mean, this card has the ability to be one of the best, and I'm just so, so excited to watch. So thank you guys so much for listening. I know you have a lot of other places you could be right now, but you spent it with us. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel and throw our videos a like at Chronic Combat Conversations. Please give our Apple Podcasts a subscription and 5-star rating. And follow us over on Twitter at Chronic Combat. Follow us on Instagram at Chronic Combat Conversations. You can follow my incredible partner, TB Scouting MMA, on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And if you're feeling crazy, feel free to give me a follow over on Instagram, the_MMA Guru, Twitter, Verdict, Tapology, Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in with us, guys. And gals, check you next time.